But I mean, it was a sort of topic you just didn't want to talk
you
about.
You didn't want to talk about it because they said such dreadful things. You see, they didn't realise how insulting they were being. I remember a young man at a dance saying to me, "You don't want women to have the vote, do you?" And I said, "Of course I do." And he said, "Do you realise that if women had the vote, they might even want to go into Parliament, and surely you couldn't want that?" And so I hedged. I didn't like to give him too much at once. So I said, "Well, you see, there'd have to be special legislation first, wouldn't there?" And that satisfied him. But they were always saying that sort of thing.
Yes.
But at the same time, very often when I was selling our paper in the streets or doing anything like that, a man would come along and say, "Hope you get in, miss." Often.
There
was
really?
A certain amount of sympathy.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that was their expression, "Hope you get in, miss." Very kind, very often. Of course, lots of people were terribly rude. But we used to stand selling the paper in the streets. And I used to help in chalking the pavements about the Bill of Rights, which I expect she's told you about.
Where did you sell your paper, Lady Ricardo?
I chaired a meeting at Hammersmith Broadway, which was rather a rowdy spot. And then I stood up on the soapbox and I had a little sentence about women being classed with criminals and lunatics, not allowed to have the vote. And I said that, and I had rather an angry speaker waiting. I suppose she was nervous. And she said, "You haven't said nearly enough yet. I haven't got nearly a big enough crowd. You must say some more." And so I had to say it over and over again because I hadn't got anything more to say. Because I wasn't a speaker at all, you see. But it was a waste of time for these good speakers to have to be up and collect the crowd, you see.
Your sister was like that too, wasn't she?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, she did much more than I did. But I was always in sympathy, but it was very hard, you know, keeping your end up with endless people being so insulting, really. I mean, practically telling you that you were a fool.
That was at parties or dances?
Yes, that sort of thing, yeah. Yes. They didn't seem to see that. I was just wondering whether there was one other thing I remember very well. My mother telling me that when was the Married Women's Property Act came in?
1881, that sort of date.
The day before I was born. Well, then it was when my mother told me that her mother often told her about what terrible bad feelings there were in the house when her husband, that would be her mother's, my grandmother's husband, when the money was paid to the wife and instead of being paid to him, he said it was outrageous. How could a woman know how to manage her money? And she said it was always a very unhappy feeling in the house at the time.
Was it really?
Yes.
Was your mother in favour of women's
suffrage? Oh, yes. Very much. And my old nanny,
Mrs.
who
Pilgrim,
lived to be 92, was too. And you know, Sir John Dickinson, who was chief... Has Cicely told you this?
No, but I know the name.
Yes. He was a very great friend of my father's. And he was chief metropolitan magistrate. And you know, he was converted He was a very, I sort of thought, a very stick-in-the-mud sort of man. But he was so much struck by the type of women who came up, who were arrested in court, that it converted him.
Did it really?
Yes, yeah. He said he couldn't believe that all these awful things were being done by women with such high motives.
What was it like, I mean, in your family, you were, what, two boys and three girls, was it?
Yes.
Did
the boys were, you see, Cicely and I were a good deal younger than than the others. The two boys were at Cambridge. And then my eldest sister, she was in it too.
Was she?
Yes. Not actively at all, but in sympathy. And my old nanny was in it.
Is that Mary Pilgrim?
Yes.
Yes.
And my mother and my father too. But of course he didn't like the violence. Nor did my husband. But my husband always had a way of pretending the things that he didn't like didn't exist. I think, and I don't mean you mustn't think I'm disparaging him, I think that he was very, very sensitive, and any sort of suffering, that sort of thing, hurt him so badly that he almost persuaded himself it wasn't so.
Mm.
He was the best man in the world, but he never gave me any support or opposition at all. But of course, he'd been brought up in the same way. His parents were all in favour of it. It was nothing. The main object was very familiar to him. But I don't think he liked the violence. And of course, they've all told you that the violence was very, very carefully directed so that it should all be against themselves, and it was strictly forbidden for anybody to hurt anyone if they could help it.
Mm. So when you got married, Lady Ricardo, did you give up the WSPU or what?
I went on being a member all the time. And we left London, I was busy with having babies, and so I didn't. I once went with Grace Rowe to Lincoln to run a meeting. At a by-election. That was a very funny time. We lived together in lodgings, and we went round in a wagonette all day long with a megaphone announcing our meetings. And somebody was going to interrupt. We didn't do that. But somebody else did. But we organised the meeting. And I always laugh at Grace Rowe whenever I see her, because we lived almost exclusively on tinned pineapple in lodgings. And once, at one of these by-elections, after it was over, we went, two or three of us, to the house of the successful candidate in the evening. And we were quite mild. We weren't going to do anything except just to remind him what we wanted, I and two other women. And he wouldn't come down. We always thought he was so afraid, but his I think it was his wife or his sister, came down trembling to interview us. She was obviously terrified of what these awful women were going to do. But we explained to her very politely that we were up to no harm. And it was all right, but they were frightened.
Because people did exaggerate how violent the women were, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Did you keep off the subject when you were married? And did you not talk about it with your husband?
Yes, I think. That's very hard to remember. You see, I was married for 62 years, so...
Yes, it must be difficult. I just wondered whether you remembered...
There's never made any difficulty between us.
No, I wasn't thinking that. But I was just wondering whether it was something you thought it was wiser to not talk about because he got so upset, you know.
Yes, I think it probably was a little bit of that.
Could you tell me a bit about your brothers? Did they come first in the family?
Well, now, my mother was a very fair-minded woman. And when we were young, she spent very little on our education and ordered, she always said, you see, we must save up for the boys to go to Cambridge. And so, if we wanted any extravagances, a little bit, she said, she'd always say, you must remember that we must afford to send the boys to Cambridge. But, when in her will, she left the daughters more money than the sons because she felt it was fair that they'd spent so much more on their education that we should have more money. So she really was really sound at heart.
I see, yes. Yes. Yes.
And she said she didn't at all want us to be in the position of having to depend on our brothers, and she gave us all an occupation. She sent me to this art school, and my sister was trained as a secretary, and because she was so determined that we shouldn't have this awful life of if we didn't marry. And then another thing, my father was a doctor, and no nice doctors, the sort of men he were, would ever take a fee from a woman who was earning her own living.
Sure.
Never. It would have been considered the most ungentlemanly thing to do. So if a governess or anybody came to see him, he wouldn't take a fee.
Was it just because he knew they weren't as
well
paid?
Well, he knew that they weren't probably being properly paid.
But did you, as a child or as a young woman, did you resent your brothers being given preference at all?
No,
you thought
I
it
didn't.
Was just right, did you?
No, I didn't.
It didn't seem unfair to you then?
No. I don't really think when you're young like that you particularly want to be educated, do you?
No, certainly not at that time, anyway. No.
Only, it rather irritated me because we were both mad on going to a gymnasium and my mother would only let us go for part of the year because she said it was too expensive. And that I minded rather that the boys should have to go to Cambridge and I couldn't go to my beloved gym all the year.
What did you do in your gymnasium, actually?
Oh, well, it was before the days of Swedish. We did beautiful things like flying rings and horse and parallel bars and we made our very great friends there, because we never went to school, you see. My father didn't approve of girls going to school because he said they worked them too hard, and no girl ought ever to do more than 4 hours a day. And he wouldn't let us go. And so, you see, we didn't really see much of our contemporary girl friends until we went to the gymnasium, and then we made very great friends with them.
It must have been unusual to go to a gymnasium at that time as a woman, a young woman, wasn't it? Wasn't it unusual to go to a gymnasium?
No, I don't think so.
For somebody of your class?
No, it was so important to us, you see, because we didn't go to school, we just did lessons at home. With a very charming governess who didn't know anything at all herself, and had no idea how to teach. But she was a very worthwhile friend all our lives, all her life.
So looking back on it, in a way, your parents sacrificed your education to your brother's education.
I think they did, yes. But I think my father partly... That wasn't the reason he didn't send us to school. That wasn't to economize. That was because he thought it was bad for us.
Yes, for your health.
Yes.
Did you get on well with your brothers? I mean...
My father.
With your brothers?
Oh yes. They were rather aloof, you know. They always called us the kids or the brats. You see, they were only a year apart, and I was 3 years younger, and Cicely was 2 years younger still, and we were one lot, you see, in the nursery when they were schoolboys.
Yeah.
I think we liked them very much, because I always remember when they came back from public school, Marlborough they were. They used to catch some unearthly train in the morning in order to get home quickly, and they used to arrive at breakfast time and rush all over the house to see whether there were any changes. And I know that was very exciting to us all. So I think we were all very devoted, really.
So you didn't feel a sort of second-class citizen in the house at all?
No.
So...
Because my mother, she really was a very enlightened woman. And one thing about her was, her great conceit was that when she was young, she learnt to Greek, and that she thought was wonderful and very enlightened. And she used to boast about it and sometimes use a Greek word showing off. But she was a very, very strong character, much more than my father, and she really ran him.
She was much older than he was, wasn't
she? Yes, she was 10 years. But that was a thing that she was terribly ashamed of. Nobody was allowed to know, and we were never allowed to mention it. Because I think people used to call that baby snatching. But they were very devoted to each other all their lives. And really, she was much younger for her at 70 than my father was when he was, say, 60. She was a much better physique. But I'm afraid that isn't what you want to know.
No, it is very much what I want to know. I mean, I'm very interested in your family life, you see, because I'm interested why all the sisters went into the WSPU, or at least sympathised with it.
It wasn't because of our brothers.
No, no.
It was because of Sylvia Pankhurst's eloquence, I think.
Yes, in the park.
You see, the first time a very old bachelor cousin of ours, whom we were devoted to, had a very lovely sense of humour, and he was a lawyer, and he said to me, "Aunt Cicely, you know, there's a very wonderful young woman talking in the park." He said, "She's a wonderful brain and extraordinary eloquence. I think it would interest you. You should go and hear her." Well, whether he was in sympathy or not, I don't know, but it was just the technique and the charm and the courage that he admired so much. So that was why Cicely and I went and listened to Christabel Pankhurst. And it wasn't long before we found we quite agreed with her.
So you didn't really go for the ideas at first at all. You just went to look at her, did you? And see what she looked like and how she performed.
I think we must have been thinking a little about it before that.
But you weren't converts anyway, before
yes,
you...
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. Can you remember the first meeting you went to?
Yes, the first meeting in the park.
Mm. What was it like?
It wasn't a very big crowd, but she was so young and full of life, and the crowd wasn't at all hostile, but she had a very ready wit, and if ever there was any heckling, she took it with the utmost good nature. You know the story of the man said, "Go home and do the washing," they were always saying that. And she said, "For goodness, don't you know, my dear man, that Monday's washing day and this is Thursday?" You know, so that was the way she took things, you see. She was never bitter.
Very gay and lively and...
Yes.
Mm.
Oh, and marvellously eloquent. She was a barrister, you know.
Did she use her hands when she was talking?
Yes, yes. Mm. She did, she did. She had very distinctive gestures. More than her mother. Her mother's was very restrained. But the charm about her mother was this wonderful voice, and we would have, of course it did lead to hero worship, it's no good pretending it didn't. You would have done anything for her, and if she used to talk to girls who rather wanted to go to prison for the cause, she always said, "Well, my dear, you know your own business best." That was always the sentence she used. And wouldn't, you know, try to persuade them by her charm and that sort of thing.
Did you ever think of going to prison yourself? Did you ever think of going to prison yourself?
No, I knew I hadn't the courage.
Well, you were worried about your father's practice, I expect, weren't you, as well?
No, to be quite honest, I was too frightened for myself. I can't pretend it was...
Well, your sister says sometimes she wishes she'd gone to prison.
Yes, well, she was so much more in it, you see, with me than... She knew them all so well personally. It was much more difficult for her to stay out of prison in those surroundings, you see, than me, because I wasn't ever right in it, you see. I was only a sympathizer.
When you say Mrs. Pankhurst had this marvellous voice, what do you mean, really?
It was a low voice. I don't know how to describe it.
I suppose it's impossible, isn't it?
Yes. She was generally very calm and very controlled, and sometimes you would feel the terrible indignation inside her, which she wouldn't let out, you know. It came through how deeply she was feeling, although she didn't ever rant.
I understand, yes.
That's where they got her rather wrong, in Shoulder to Shoulder. She was never restless like that. Although that woman was quite good, and sometimes even got a little likeness to her. But they were absolutely wrong about Sylvia, and absolutely wrong about Christabel.
Were they? How were they wrong about
Christabel? Well, because, you see, I don't believe there were any family quarrels at all. It was just a matter of policy. That Christabel and her mother were entirely agreed that the only way to make conditions better for women was to go to the Fountainhead and get them the vote. And Sylvia was also deeply concerned about the position of women, but she was much more for patching up with doing temporary measures to improve their lot. It was there, that's only a question of policy.
Yes, yes.
And I never, anyhow, I was so deeply shocked that they should have treated what I thought was a very fine subject so pettily,
yes,
that they thought it would, if they must please the public by going into things like little petty quarrels, which might have existed, but which didn't matter. And they made much too much of it.
Yes.
And the same with the Petty Lawrences. That was again a question of policy.
Yes. They were moving programmes, though, in some ways. I mean, the Women's March is a very moving march, isn't it? And it was rather movingly done, wasn't it? You know, when the programmes began, don't you think?
There was a lot of...
Women's March and the different scenes.
Yes.
You know, it was rather well done, I thought. But
yes, I don't remember much about it. But I do remember a terrible day I spent on a coach with the Drum and Fife Band, which was excruciating. And all the very enthusiasts under Mrs. Lee, they had a very smart uniform, and they played the Drum and Fife atrociously. And I sat behind them for about 5 hours on a coach all decorated in the colours. I think we were advertising a meeting or something. And I think I must have been looking very depressed after a time, because the man looked up at me for the pavement and said, "Stick it, Mary." And it was something to stick. I can't tell you what the band was like, but it was a very good advertisement.
Oh, yes, yes.
You see, they thoroughly understood the art of advertising. Just the same as they made such a tremendous fuss over the funeral of the woman.
Emily Davison.
Yes. You see, honestly, I know they didn't approve of that, because there was a risk that they might have killed the jockey, and that was entirely against their principles. But they wouldn't belittle her for anything, and they made a tremendously moving funeral march in her honour, and never said by any word that they wished she hadn't.
Do you remember them saying behind the scenes that they didn't approve of?
I don't remember them saying so, but I remember that was the impression I got.
Yes.
Because you always get what they call the rather lunatic fringe, don't you, to any movement. And she was a fanatic. But that is not exactly against her. She's the one who hid in the ventilators in the House of Commons. I didn't know her. Cicely did.
Yes, she told me a bit about her. You knew Mary Lee, though, did you?
Hmm?
Did you know Mary Lee?
You
say you sat behind the band.
Oh,
you?
Mary. Oh, no, only just at meetings.
Hmm.
And then there was in Paddington, where we lived, there was a very handsome, well-dressed, horsey woman. She used to lead processions riding a horse in beautiful riding habit and things.
That was Mrs. Haverfield, was it?
Yes. You've yes. got it all, haven't you?
Yes, I've come across her. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Did you... you went to your... If we go back to when you first went to the meeting, you went to Hyde Park and you saw Christabel.
Yes.
What happened after that, then? Did you join straight away, or what?
No, I think... Then I think they began having Queen's Hall meetings. And I think we used to go... I think we used to meet in the Queen's Hall, first of all.
Or the Portman Rooms, was it? Queen's Hall was one of the places where you met, anyway.
Yes.
Mm.
Before the Albert Hall, but of course, when the movement got really big, we had the Albert Hall.
Mm.
And we used to go every Monday, I think, to meetings. And on one occasion, I can remember, when Mrs. Pankhurst was in prison, I remember I think Mrs. Pankhurst was in prison, somebody making a very moving speech, and everybody took off their jewellery and all their valuables and piled them into plates and sent them up to the platform. It was the most remarkable sight.
Was it like your gymnasium? Did you meet lots of friends there and so on? I mean, did it get you out of your family circle sort of thing?
Well, I got to know Grace. I don't think it did. My great friends were in it, but their parents very strongly disapproved. And I had to promise our parents that I wouldn't influence them about it at all, because they said it was wrong and very dangerous. And so I was always rather craven. And so I promised I wouldn't influence them. But we kept on being friends all the same. And I think they probably were at heart the same.
Mm. Did they keep asking you questions about it?
I expect they did. But I think their mother was a very dislikable, unkind person. And I thought she would make life hideous for them if I did influence them at all.
Mm.
It wasn't only funk. They had a very unhappy home life.
Looking back on your home life, it was a happy life.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yes, my mother always used to say, the most important thing is to have a happy childhood. She said, I had a very happy childhood, and I want my children to have the same. Oh, yes, we were very happy.
So you couldn't say that you joined the women's suffrage movement because you were unhappy.
Oh, dear,
it wasn't
no.
like that at all, no.
No. In fact, it spoilt my happiness. Because I was such a coward, you see. I didn't like being on the in the unpopular side. No moral courage at all.
How did you notice you were unpopular then?
Hmm?
What made you notice you were on the unpopular side?
Unhappy.
Hmm.
Because this dread of going anywhere and meeting people and them saying something about the screaming sisterhood or something that you felt bound to defend. You see what I mean?
Yes, I see. So what did you do? You did speak up, did you?
Sometimes you had to.
Yes.
But if you could possibly avoid the subject, if you went to a dinner party, those are the days of dinner parties of 14 or 15 people, very formal. And you were terrified who you'd sit next, and you could feel it coming round gradually to them saying, oh, what are these awful women? Did you see that somebody did so and so? And you had to say that you quite agreed with what they were doing. And it was a rather nightmare. But I think that's only because I wasn't born with moral courage.
What happened next then? Did you get involved in an argument with them usually?
Yes. You got out of it as soon as you could. But they had plenty of time to say insulting things, not realizing really quite how rude they were being. They seemed to forget that you were a woman too. And they would say women don't understand, or women have got no brains, or something like that.
Mm. It must have been very painful.
It was very, very painful. Then, of course, it was terribly painful when they were really suffering tortures and you weren't doing anything at all. That was just like being left out of the war. You know, you had an awful conscience that people were going to prison two or three times and you weren't going at all.
Did you know anyone well who went to prison?
Well, it's a new Greece, very well.
Oh, yes, yes.
I've lost her now, but I knew her very well indeed.
What was she like then?
She was charming and full of fun, but absolutely, she thought of nothing else.
Dedicated.
Dedicated, yes. In fact, you were a little bit afraid of her because she was so persuasive. You were rather afraid of what she might make you do. You couldn't stand up against her. But she was so charming.
She looked very nice, didn't
she? Oh, yes, she did. Of course, I haven't seen her for a great many years.
Mm.
Because she went to live in America, didn't she?
That's right, yes. I've met her, actually. I saw her a few weeks ago.
Yes.
She lives near Tunbridge Wells.
Yes. Yes, I know Cicely goes to see her.
Did you ever get influenced by Theosophy?
No.
Because she was, wasn't she? She.
Yes. I didn't know whether it was Theosophy. It was some religion.
Hmm.
And Christabel Pankhurst became some, joined some sort of
thing. Yes, later on she did, yes.
Yeah, in America.
Yes, that's right. She, Second Coming, she believed in, yes. Yes. Because there were quite a lot of suffragettes who were influenced by Theosophy.
Yes.
And Grace was one of them.
Yes. Yes,
she still is a Theosophist, I think.
A rather funny thing happened to me the other day. A young cousin of mine who'd been travelling in Ethiopia, and she said, "Do you know, I met such an interesting man in Ethiopia when I was there, and he was Dr. Pankhurst." And that was Sylvia's illegitimate son.
Mm.
It was so funny coming around that way.
Yes.
I said, "No, surely not Pankhurst." She said, "Yes."
Mm.
And I think that was a very conscientiously thought out arrangement. And I think the reason Mrs. Pankhurst was so terribly against it was not only because she had those principles, but of course she felt it was so terribly bad for the woman's cause. I'm sure that was what was at the back of her being so unforgiving about it.
About Theosophy, you mean?
No, about having the illegitimate child.
Oh, I see, yes, yes.
I think she thought it would do women, and then how the suffrage people, so much harm in the eyes of the world, you see.
Mm. Do you remember Sylvia at all?
I remember her when we had a very big bazaar I think that was in the Albert Hall, and she painted the scenery around it. But I never saw much of her. My recollection is that she didn't really cut much ice.
No.
That's why I can't think why shoulder to shoulder made her the important member of the family.
Mm.
And the only reason I can think of is that they gave her much the best actress.
Yes.
And she did look rather like Sylvia.
Did she? Yes.
But the Pankhurst, Christabel, didn't look or behave the least like the one in Shoulder to Shoulder.
Mm. How did Christabel differ then from the one in Shoulder to Shoulder?
Get what?
How was Christabel different from the actress in Shoulder to Shoulder?
Well,
it's difficult, isn't it, really?
I think in Shoulder to Shoulder they made her out rather self-advertising, rather shirking, and spiteful young woman. And she didn't look a bit like that, like the actress who took that part.
Mm.
But Mrs. Pankhurst did look a little like the other one.
Mm.
And Sylvia did too.
Mm.
But I'm quite sure that it was a wrong presentation of Christabel.
You say Christabel used her hands, made gestures and so on. What sort of gestures did she make?
That's difficult, isn't it?
Mm. She used her hands quite a lot, did she, when she was speaking?
Yes, she did.
Mm.
And she was very slender, and she sort of she swayed a certain amount and talking, you know, from side to side and that sort of thing.
She was very graceful on her feet, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
Mm. Anyway, you went along to these meetings in the Queen's Hall and other places.
Yes.
What did you do? You became a member, did you then?
Yes.
How did you become a member? I mean, what did you have to do to become a member? Did you sign something or pay over some money or what? Can you remember?
I don't think there was any money.
No. So anyway, you joined.
I joined.
With your sister.
And I always wore the purple, white and green ribbon.
Did you?
Unless I was too much of a card. In some places I went to, I left it behind. Because... I'm told, you know, this is nothing to do with the suffrage.
Mm.
But I was talking to somebody the other day
mm-hmm.
who had been nearly as long in the WI movement as I've been, that there was terrible opposition. They were only founded in 1918, to the women having one meeting a month. They said it was a terrible thing, taking women out of their homes.
You mean in here, or...?
In some of the villages, I'm not quite sure where, but that wasn't the case where I was. But they said that it was teaching them to neglect the homes and the children, to meet once a month. And another place I heard where the parson was so indignant at the women thinking they could run a WI movement themselves, that he said he must be the president. That's only 1918.
Yes.
So I suppose I don't know what women's lib are up against, but I suppose they've probably got some. We felt when we got the vote, we'd finished.
Did you go to these meetings with your sister?
Yes.
So
she used to be a steward, I think.
Hmm.
I don't think I was ever a steward.
Why was she more keen on it than you were, do you think?
I don't know. We never disagreed at all.
Because she really did a lot for the cause, didn't she?
Yes, but you see, she was a trained secretary. And she was working with them, you see, right in it. And then you see, I married in 1911. And then, soon after that, we moved out of London.
Mm.
And I had my children.
Mm.
Then there's that funny stage when once my children were growing up. There was a sort of reaction. They wouldn't listen to anything about that because they said, they were all up at Cambridge and they said there wasn't the slightest difference in the treatment of women. And I don't think until they became older women as they are now, they knew what we were making such a fuss about.
Mm.
There was a very, very decided reaction after that.
Yes.
I think that must be really because parents are never right.
Mm. Mm.
Mm.
But one thing, Cicely didn't like dances, did she? She didn't like social occasions very
much. Not much.
And I suppose a lot of her energy went into the WSPU instead. Whereas you yes. liked dances, did you?
Well, I was a better dancer than she was.
Yes, yes.
I didn't tell her so, but I was. I was a very good dancer.
Were you? Mm.
And I went to 20 dances in one season.
Did you really?
Yes.
When you look back on your life as a young woman, does it seem rather confined to you now?
No.
I mean, you were accompanying your mother to places, I suppose, a lot. You were visiting and things like that.
My mother used to have an at-home day and one of us had to take turns to talk to her. To help her. That was rather awful, very boring. And another time we used to have to go and pay afternoon calls with her. But she hated it just as much as we did. But you see, she did it for the good of the practice. It helped my father if they knew his very charming wife in those days. And so we used to go around, but my mother was really a country woman, and when she was really happiest, she never liked the London life. She always had a little cottage in the country somewhere where she could escape and garden all the day. And once she came down at night, after it was dark, to the cottage, and she couldn't wait till the morning, she went round with a box of matches, examining all the flowers to see what they'd done while she was away. But that's not what you want to know.
Mary Pilgrim, you say she was in favour of women's suffrage.
Oh. Dear Mary Pilgrim, she was lovely. Even now I can remember lots of her little sayings. When she got angry with us when we were children, she used to say, "Dash your little buttons." I don't know what it meant. And her sister, Pamela, used to go to what they called penny readings. And she used to sing and recite at them. And apparently you paid a penny to go to these things. And she used to sing all sorts of songs that they'd heard at the penny readings. And there was one other thing I wanted to ask you. My brothers, doctors not taking fees.
Tell me again, because I didn't have the tape recorder switched on. This was a friend of yours who said that, was it? About not marrying you?
No, it was my brother at Cambridge.
Your brother? What did he say exactly?
He said, "You know, Betsy, no man quite solemnly. He was a very handsome young man, and he made friends in rather a smart set. He was at Trinity. My other brother was quite different. And I remember this brother. Mother said, "Why don't you ever ask your Cambridge friends to come and stay?" And she said, "Well, pretty dull for them, wouldn't it be, with only Betsy and Sidney here?" Well, she was always very nice to us. And she was very fond of horses. And we used to help him in the stables and all that sort of thing. He just said, "Betsy, you know, no man will want to marry you if you do all this sort of thing." And that gave me rather a qualm, but I didn't really believe it was quite true.
Well, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Did you take Mary Pilgrim to WSPU meetings with you?
Oh, yes, she loved Mrs. Pankhurst.
Did she?
Yes. She was a lovely person. She was very fond of men, but she always had rather a scorn for them. Well, she always thought that she could do their jobs. If there was a little carpentering job, she'd always do it. And she used to mend the clocks. And whenever a clock went wrong, she used to pour paraffin into it. And she said, "There's no need to get these silly watchmen. I can do it perfectly well." And they did go. And my mother was rather like that too. Once when she was very old and not quite right in her mind, she was found hammering the table in the middle of the night in a flat. And when somebody said, "You mustn't do that at this time," she said, "I'm going to master this. I've never been defeated by anything I meant to do, and I'm not going to be defeated by this table." She must have been over 90 then.
Goodness, yes. You admired your mother a lot, did you, as a girl?
Mm. Yes, and I loved her more than Cicely did, and Cicely loved Nanny more than I did. Mm. We both loved them a lot.
Yes. Mm.
But what I was going to say about Nanny, she used to say, "You know, poor, they're such poor things." She said, "Now when people come to stay, if they haven't got enough blankets, a woman can always put her skirt over her on her bed to keep her warm. But a poor man, what's the good of putting a pair of trousers on? On your bed to keep you warm."
Why did she admire Mrs. Pankhurst so much?
Well, you see, that's... you can't account for charm, can you?
Mm.
She had charm. Mm.
For people of all classes.
Has anybody ever found a meaning for that?
Mm. Mm.
It's just the same that some people you can never click with, however hard you try.
Mm.
By the by, you haven't ever met my favourite granddaughter in Oxford. She's a fellow of Somerville.
Oh, I might have done. What's her name?
Joanna Bosanquet.
No, I haven't met her, actually. No, what does she teach?
Philosophy.
Does she? No, I haven't met her.
She's the apple of my eye. She's a perfect...
There are lots of artists in the women's suffrage movement, lots of painters and musicians and people like that. Why do you think that is?
Dr. Ethel Smyth.
Yes, that sort of...
It's a good tune, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yes. Did that ever strike you at the time? There were lots of artistic people?
There was another one, a woman called Wright, who was a very good artist.
And the Brackenburys as well.
Yes, and the Brackenburys.
Mm. Mm.
Oh yes, Georgina Brackenbury, I remember her.
You paint yourself, don't you?
I did, yes.
Mm.
Yes, I was at the Sage School.
Were you really? What do you think, I'm looking back on it, do you think you got anything out of the women's suffrage movement? You were in it for about 3 years, weren't you, really?
I suppose so.
Did it influence your later life very much, do you think? Or was it too short a period?
I think it did a great deal, because people always used to condole with us, because we had 3 daughters and no sons. And that used to make me rather indignant. And I think we both took a great deal more trouble to see that they had everything, because they were girls and boys were getting more. Mm. I think,
mm.
You see, we sent them all to Cambridge.
You made sure they had the best education.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. And they all did very well.
What was the Ricardo's attitude to your women's suffrage views?
Oh, Harry's father was all in favour of it.
Was he?
And his grandfather, Sir Alexander Rendell, he was an engineer. He was Harry's grandfather. That's my husband. And he was thought straight away when he was talking to his constitutional daughters who were in the movement but in the constitutional one. He said, "My dear, these are the people who'll get it. You'll never get it getting on year to year with your committees and your like this." He said, "This is going to win the vote for you." And he was my husband's grandfather.
I see. So it wasn't embarrassing for you at all, being connected with the movement?
No. Mm. Oh, no, there was nothing to fight in our relations at all.
Mm.
Or my husband.
Mm. Why didn't you join the NUWSS then, do you think?
It didn't come my way.
Mm.
It wasn't until, I suppose, the advertisement of the other thing.
Yes. You didn't disagree with it, it was just come across it,
no.
Really.
And they didn't disagree with us. I mean, a few of them, of course, were shocked.
Mm.
But as you see, their reason was that they didn't like this way of managing things. They went on having committees and passing resolutions, which the men just laughed at, and or talked out or something.
Did you ever have arguments with your in-laws about tactics, about the women's suffrage tactics?
No.
Because some of them were in the NUWSS. Did they argue with you about the WSPU at all?
No. Mm. Not on Harry's side. On my side, I think, you know, we were a great many dominant women on my mother's side, because she had a sister who was married to a parson, and the story is, which a perfect stranger told me, they said at some village fete, they said, "You see that old man over there? That's our director. That's our rector. But you see the woman with him? She's our director." So I think that may sound beside the point, but I think there are a great many dominant women.
Yes. Mm.
In my forebears.
Mm. What about your elder sister? You haven't said anything much about her.
That was a very sad thing. I didn't really like her. And now I'm terribly sorry, because I realise that if she'd lived nowadays, they would have been able to help her. She was very neurotic.
Was she?
And she had a very sad love affair. And she never got over it. And she was very much the elder sister, you see. She was 9 years older than me. And she used to... she was out of sympathy with us. But I really think now that she was very, very lonely, because she and my mother didn't understand each other, and she adored my father. And then the two boys, you see, came after that, and they were very close. And then there was a gap, and then there was my sister and I. And I think she was very lonely, and I think jealous.
Mm.
And she wasn't very nice to us, but I don't think she meant to be. And I think she's one of the persons that psychiatrists could probably have helped.
Mm.
You see, she never got over this terrible disappointment, which was another rather sign of the times, because the man who fell in love with her, and she with him, they wanted to be engaged. And his father absolutely forbade it. And he must have been a very poor creature. And she wanted him to marry his partner. And he did.
Hmm. Hmm. What a terrible thing.
So, that really wrecked her life.
Hmm.
But I think that if she'd had more understanding, possibly she would have, you know, been able to get over it better, instead of turning very bitter.
I see, yes. She could have had a job, of course, couldn't she now?
She did have a job.
Did she?
She was secretary to the Duchess of Marlborough.
Oh.
She wasn't trained, but she was very capable. And she gave all her affection to her.
I see.
But she wasn't, she was very unhappy.
You say she sympathised with the women's suffrage movement, did she?
Oh, yes. She didn't do anything, no.
You'd think she would do more, really, wouldn't you, in view of her situation?
Yes.
I wonder why she wasn't really active.
I think perhaps she was rather wrapped up in her duchess then.
Oh, I see, yes, yes.
Who was very good to her.
Hmm.
I think she became rather anti-man.
Mm. It's a very sad story. That sort of thing couldn't happen now, really, could it?
Well, does it happen now?
I mean, the
would any son now be such a fool?
No, I don't think so. The parent wouldn't be able to stop a son from...
No, I remember his mother talking to my mother, and she said, "You know, my husband's a perfect martinet." I never had anybody use that expression before or since. I think she was sorry for Mildred.
Mm. Mm. So did she come to meetings with you, Mildred?
Sometimes, yes. But my impression is that she was working.
Mm. Mm. Could I ask you a bit about what happened afterwards, Lady Ricardo? You married in 1911, didn't you?
Yes.
And then you had three daughters.
Yes.
What did you moved here, did you?
Oh, no. This was my father and mother-in-law's house.
Oh.
We came here for holidays.
Hmm.
We lived, first of all, at Hammersmith's, the little flats, overlooking the river.
Mm.
We had a tiny flat there, and we gave ourselves awful airs because we had a motor car and a motor boat.
Mm.
But then you see, my husband was an engineer.
Yes.
And so of course he did it all himself.
Yes.
to an awfully messy little motor boat and the most ridiculous car. But we used to have very happy times because he was mad on butterflies and caterpillars. And we got all sorts of rare ones from the zoo. And we got one very magnificent caterpillar which got hungrier and hungrier, and it only lived on plum leaves. And there was often the plum tree left in England.
Wife or a mother, or did you do any public work afterwards? I'm afraid I don't know about your...
Well, I became... I think I'm the oldest Women's Institute member in West Sussex.
Are you really?
You see, I've been 51 years a member.
Goodness.
52 years. And I became a... I was a president of three different institutes. And they've done a tremendous lot for educating women in the country. They all now know how to run a meeting with decent sort of procedure and to work together. I think it's been a very, very fine thing. I think the need for it now has a bit lessened, because in the days when they were started, you see, there was nothing for women at all in the villages. There was no... The men had clubs and that sort of thing, but the women had nothing whatever. And then when they were founded during the war, it was in order to grow and preserve more food. And now they can work together.
It's very interesting, yes. Did you draw on your experience of the women's suffrage movement when you joined the Women's Institutes, do you think? Is there any connection between those two parts?
I was still very frightened of standing up when I was a president.
Mm.
Although I'd done it at street corners. But I suppose it had educated me a bit.
Mm. You moved from Hammersmith out here then, did you, to Sussex later?
No. We went to Walton. Walton-on-Thames.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the year after we were married. And that used to be very exciting because we were in a little lodging house. And my husband used to come down after work in London. And we used to go on the river and have our supper and swim across the Thames at sunset. And that was very romantic, I can tell you.
It must have been, yes.
But it was a very hot year, but he was a very good, an awful coward about cold water. And he used to tell me about how at Rugby they used to have to break the ice when they went on their runs. And I said that would cure him forever, like in cold water again. Because he wouldn't bathe unless it was really hot.
So when did you move from Walton to Sussex then? Was that some years
1919.
Oh, I see. So you joined the Women's Institute at Walton, did you?
No, I joined... Oh, no, we went to Lancing.
Oh, I see.
We were 15 years at Lancing.
Hmm.
We married in 1911. And I think we went to... I think we went next to... what did I tell you? What was the second place?
Well, you went to Hammersmith, then you went to Walton, then
Walton.
Yes.
It was really Hersham.
Mm.
Then we went to Lancing.
I see.
And my youngest baby was born in Lancing.
Mm.
and the middle one was born in Hammersmith. No, that's right. In Walton.
Mm.
And the eldest at Hammersmith, that's
I
right.
I see.
And now they're all three doctors.
Are they really? Medical doctors?
No. And my eldest daughter is a daughter of biology, science.
Mm.
And she's now the principal of a women's college in Cambridge. And she's a magistrate. And she's on the council of the Senate of the university.
Is she really? Which college is she principal of?
Well, she was at Newnham.
Mm.
The one she's principal of is this new one called Lucy. It's for women who had college degrees.
Yes.
And have dropped out of the academic world, either through looking after old parents or bringing up a family.
I see, yes.
And bringing them back.
I see.
And there's a tremendous demand for it.
Very interesting.
And the university has given them two little houses.
I see.
And now they've outgrown those and they've got another big one. And for a long time, several of these women used to meet, they used to have a little dining club and discussing making another college.
I see.
And she and four or five other women worked at it and worked at it until they started on a very small scale. Then the first president was a Quaker, a great friend of my daughter's. And then she was a natural science, I think.
Mm.
And then she retired.
Yeah, daughters. What did they do, the second one?
The next one was a doctor. She took a first at Cambridge, and then she married and went to Canada. And that was an unhappy marriage. Her husband deserted her.
Oh,
and left her with four little boys.
Oh, dear.
Which she couldn't cope with.
Mm.
So she came back. And we had two of the little boys here and brought them up for 8 years for her.
Did you?
You know, going back to her.
Mm.
That was a very difficult position because you had to be very careful not to try and take the position of mother.
Of course, yes.
It was very hard.
Yes.
But they were lovely, and now they've done very well. And
she's still in Canada, is she, now?
No, she's back.
Is she?
Then she became a psychiatrist.
Did she?
And her eldest son is now a lecturer at Glasgow. He took a first at Edinburgh.
Hmm.
And her second one is an architect in Hong Kong. And her third one is, I hoped it'll come right, but at the moment he went into business and was a very great success. Was said to be very good with the clients, but he suddenly got sick of it and said there was nothing in the world for him but music.
Hmm.
And he's made a group, he's got one of these awful groups.
Has he
and
really?
He's always just going to make his fortune.
Goodness.
But he really, but he said he wouldn't go back to being well off again for anything. He's much happier.
Well, that's the main thing, isn't it?
Well, yes, in some ways.
What about your youngest daughter?
The youngest son there is still at Cambridge.
Oh, I see, yes.
And he's reading sociology.
Is he?
Mm. Now, my youngest daughter, she's 5 years younger than the others. She's Camilla. And you don't mind me I'm not very restrained about my daughters, you see. You don't mind, do you?
No, I'm very interested in your...
She's a brilliant person.
Is she?
She's a psychiatrist. And she's got all sorts of letters after her name.
Is she really?
And she has got a big practice. She's got a flat in London and a practice in London. And they've got a little house in the country. And she's got more patients there. And this year, they had a big international conference on psychiatry, or analytical psychiatry, and she was the chairman.
Goodness.
So...
What's her name, actually?
Camilla Bosanquet.
Oh, yes, I see.
She's the mother of Joanna, you see.
I see, yes, yes.
And she's coming down to see me tonight.
Is she really?
And, she was rather beautiful and has a wonderful personality. You feel better when you've seen her. I think that's because she's such a psychiatrist, you know, she is.
Why have so many of your daughters...